Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mliwa Gavaza, and it is a Friday, which means we get into the economics of the week. And it's been quite an interesting time in South Africa, starting the week off with an interest rate cut coming from the South African Reserve Bank early in the week. But before that, at the end of last week, after we had recorded our episode last week, the president actually then came out to extend the national lockdown for the COVID-19 crisis by a further 2 weeks, which is then said to take us to the end of April, putting further strain on the economy. And we see that in America, jobless claims have also gone up. I think we are in the plus 16 million region on that end. So around the world, it's quite trying times. But to just contextualize what it means for us here in South Africa, we are joined by Nicola Weimar, who is the chief economist at Nedbank, to perhaps help us shed some light on how some of these issues mentioned are going to probably affect us here in South Africa. Nicola, hi, how are you? Thank you for joining us.
I'm absolutely fine, and it's a pleasure to be with you today.
No. Thank you. I guess to start off, where, you know, from a chronological point of view, you know, the lockdown, we had already been given the 21 days that was meant to end yesterday. Actually, today, many South Africans thought that they would either be back at work or would at least have some greater freedom of movement. How has the news of the extended lockdown perhaps impacted us economically, and I guess going forward, because now we've just entered that extended period?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so the problem at the moment is, of course, a lack of real economic data. The release schedule by Statistics South Africa was delayed. So we sit in a situation where in April, we are only going to have February's numbers. And in May, we will only get March's numbers. And if you recall, we started the sort of social distancing exercise, I think it was around the 15th of March. And then it was only the last 5 days of March that we had lockdown. So March will give us some indication of the quantum of the effect on the South African economy. But we're only going to have that in May. And hopefully by May, the worst of this pandemic and the containment measures that government has been forced to adopt, it's hopefully over. But the reality is that it is an extreme situation. It's an unprecedented situation. It is going to dip the South African economy into recession. There's a lot of debate. Will it be a V-shaped recession, a W-shaped recession, an L-shaped recession, a U-shaped recession? I think the simple way of putting it, it is just going to be very bad. We've been trying to get a sense of the quantum of the decline by looking, for example, at industries where we have a little bit of more, detail in terms of what makes up what. And if you look at, for example, manufacturing, 56% of manufacturing sector is not allowed to operate. Retail sales, in a similar sort of situation, below 50%, but still, you know, that's a chunk. I think it's something like 46% of the industry that is not allowed to actually operate over this period. And the outcome is, of course, that you sell nothing. So if you go from a certain level, it really is absolutely irrelevant what that level is, and you sell nothing, that is more than 100% decline. So we are talking here about very, very bad numbers that are going to come through for April, and that's going to probably drag the whole of the second quarter into a very sharp contraction. At this point, you could have really extreme numbers coming through in the second quarter. You could have declines of over 30% in GDP on a quarter-on-quarter basis. So going through it, literally day by day, just to get a sense of the quantum, because we have nothing nothing to compare it with. This is not the global financial crisis. It's South Africa is not in the same position than we were back then. And also, it's a different type of crisis altogether. It has brought economic activity to a dead halt. And so, you know, if we look at that and we assume some kind of recovery in the second half of the year, even if these restrictions are lifted very, very gradually, we get to a 7% decline in GDP this year. So that is really very severe stuff. I think the Reserve Bank was at 6%. I've seen some numbers bandied out there of minus 9%. It's all very, very possible. Our worst case scenario is where we assume that the lockdown actually does last until about mid-May. And where restrictions are lifted, it is lifted very, very gradually, like you see now in the mining industry, where they're only allowed to operate at 50% of their capacity. And in our worst case, the economy could actually contract by almost 20% this year. So it is the extreme nature of these containment measures that simply means that from an economic perspective, the impact is dramatic because there's no activity. And so on your growth rates, which are probably not the best indicator of what's truly happening in the economy, because growth rates are influenced by the base from which you calculate, you know, the numbers are going to look very, very ugly. We've seen that in China today. They came out with their GDP number. And remember, they had their most sort of severe period of restriction and lockdown in the first quarter. And on a year-on-year basis, the economy contracted for the first time on record, falling by 6.8%. That is their GDP. So if that happened to them, then, you know, the impact on us could be that much more severe.
It definitely does sound quite, I think severe is quite a word. A lot of people just saying that the China economic growth miracle has finally come to an end due to what's going on with the COVID-19. One of the things that's really striking me from what you're saying is that actual lack of data and how, you know, actually calculating quantitatively what the quantum of the impact actually is down the line is actually going to be something that's one delayed, but is two made difficult. So right now, with your team, what type of indicators do you have access to, and what are you keeping an eye on? Because you've just said that economic growth is perhaps not the best indicator to look at right now. What are you sort of factoring in? What type of items are you guys monitoring at the moment?
Well, we're certainly looking at other countries like China, like the United States, Spain, Europe, you know, as a collective. Certainly there we will focus on the countries that you have seen the most extreme containment measures implemented. That would obviously be Spain, Italy, Germany, and now France. I understand that they've extended their lockdown. And we are looking at the rate of decline you see in things like retail sales, industrial production, and all of these sort of high-frequency statistics. You know, that gives us a sense of what we can expect in South Africa in terms of, you know, just how severe the decline will be and what the quantum of the contraction is likely to be on your overall GDP figures. However, you know, having said that, you'll have to make some kind of adjustment for the fact that the impact in South Africa is likely to be worse because we allowed virtually nothing. Even in the worst affected countries, even during China's lockdown, they did allow things like your sort of online shopping to continue, deliveries to continue, even though it was under very strict hygiene rules and very strict social distancing arrangements, you know, where packages were left. outside a property with a note, if it was food, with a note of, what was the temperature of the individual that prepared it before the meal and what was it after the meal, and those sorts of things. So in many countries, they allowed at least that type of economic activity to proceed. And of course, that helps, your GDP tick over, even if it is at a much slower and much lower rate. So in the case of South Africa, we just brought everything to a halt except for food, some really essential services, banking, medical, supply, healthcare, and of course your pharmaceutical companies, they continue to operate. And then also, of course, your pharmacies and chemists and so on. But everything else basically came to a shutdown. So in our case, I think the impact will be more severe. So the question is, what do you add for that? Do you add another 10%? Do you add another 5%? It's actually virtually impossible to say. So I think that from an investor's perspective, for all the listeners out there, when you look at GDP forecasts on South Africa's growth rate, just bear in mind that absolutely no one have anything to base it on. I don't want to completely undermine the trust in my profession, but the reality is that there is no data that you could feed into any model that at this point will give you any kind of indication of how severe the contraction will be.
I guess a follow-on from that is because you just brought out for the investors and the like. I guess the follow-on then is, what type of discussions have you seen COVID sort of sparking, either within your own organization as a bank or for clients or the investment community, the people that are using the type of projections or the models that you guys do create? How have conversations shifted because of COVID-19 in the last couple of weeks?
I think we've all realized, I suppose, the limitation of formal econometric models. Most of them are not built for these sorts of severe shocks. What they can do very effectively and very accurately is, once you have a quantum on those shocks and some data to feed into the model, they can tell you what the ripple effect will be and how long it will sort of be present in the economy in the months and the quarters ahead. So they are still very useful econometric models, but I suppose as a forecasting tool, they have their limitations. And I think what COVID-19 really illustrates is that that is indeed the case. So one has to apply more logic. You have to step out of the models and maybe use the relationships they have indicated, but really make some logical assumptions in terms of what will happen. And perhaps the more, I think, useful thing for companies out there is to work with scenarios and to plan for the worst, hope for the best, but plan for the worst. So use ranges and scenarios to get a sense of what the likely impact is going to be on your firm, and equally for investors. I think that in the banking industry, it really is about trying to get a sense of the quantum. It matters tremendously in banking because we are a very cyclical industry. So equally for the retail industry, you will now, for example, find that clothing retailers find themselves in a bit of a exceedingly tight spot. They sit with stock in an industry where fashion and changes all the time from one season to the other, and they've now got a whole load of stock that they might not be able to sell when the shops open. And that is a deadweight loss to them. So it's all of these sorts of realities that I think the best way to plan for it, to deal for it with it, is to use scenario analysis and say, okay, well, let's assume the lockdown is more than a month. It's a month and a half. What if it's 2 months? What if it's 2.5 months? What if, you can work with a whole bunch of scenarios around that and say, okay, so if the impact is that over a month, then maybe the impact will be not necessarily double over 2 months, because some restrictions will be relaxed, but maybe it is I don't know, half of that initial impact, and it's sort of really about applying some rational and logical thought about the idea, just so that you know as a firm what is the worst case scenario you need to prepare for, and also so that management can make contingency plans in order to keep the business afloat. Does it mean you cut costs? Does it mean you cut any of your expansionary plans? Does it mean you introduce new ways of working? And that ultimately maybe is the thing that helps you surviving. But you do need to be agile as a company. You do need to be very proactive, and that is essential, therefore, that you do the scenario analysis, you understand the downside risk, and you start to take proactive action.
I actually want to, I guess, shift now to another consideration that the companies that you're talking about would have likely been paying attention to, and that's interest rates. We started off this week with the Reserve Bank cutting interest rates by another 100 basis points, 225 basis points in total. Within the first maybe 4 months of the year is unheard of in the last maybe 4 to 5 years, just looking at the history of the MPC and how Davish Lesetsha's administration has been at the SARB. What do you make of the policy, I guess, responses to COVID-19 so far?
I think the Reserve Bank's done an excellent job. They have been open to suggestions from the banking industry. They were quick to spot liquidity issues and constraints emerging, at the point where lockdown became a reality and social isolation became a reality. And as you know, they are providing liquidity to the money market. They also noticed the dysfunction in the South African bond markets, especially the bond market for government debt, and that you have this incredibly steep yield curve. And largely that was a result of just the blind panic that erupted all over the global markets and the complete switch to risk-off sentiment. And so any nation like South Africa that's very vulnerable and that faces a real uphill battle in the years ahead in terms of dealing with its own fiscal challenges, it just found massive capital outflows as a result of that. And then we got hit even further by sovereign risk rating downgrades, to the point that we are now universal junk. And of course, what we saw is that all our CDS spreads, all the risk premiums just spiked, and that market went into dysfunction, and the Reserve Bank stepped in there, and they have been very actively buying government bonds, and the result of that, of course, has been, I wouldn't say a better yield curve, but certainly a less extreme and dysfunctional yield curve. So they've been very active on that side. And then, of course, they have awoken to the reality that South Africa will enter deep recession pretty early on. So their first cut was 100 basis points in March. We called that one. We went back to, I think we were the only people, we went back to the global financial crisis. Interest rates then were at a much higher level. Inflation was also at a higher level. So they had a lot of space to cut. And they were a bit late back then to react. But when they did react, there was no issue of 25 basis points. It was pointless. So they moved 100 basis points a shot. I think in the end, over the global financial crisis, we had within the space of 1 year, interest rates go down by 500 basis points or 5%. So when you're in a crisis, these are not really such strange moves. We all just have to wake up to the reality that it is no longer business as usual. And the Reserve Bank, I think, did that. They responded quickly, cut rates by 100 basis points. Then, when the lockdown was extended, I actually had a sense they were going to do something because, you're doubling the effect on the economy in terms of if you had an anticipation of GDP contracting by 2%, it will now be closer to 4 or 6%. 10%. And so that is the reality you're talking about. And so they did that and they cut by another 100 basis points. The only difference for me now is the reality that our rates are actually in absolute levels much lower. Inflation is also lower. But if they continue to cut by much more in the months ahead, of course, we will go deep into a negative real interest rate territory. And for a country where, you know, foreign investors are already quite doubtful about, you do have to continue to attract capital inflow. The rand is very vulnerable. It is gyrating around much weaker levels. I don't think it's an inflationary concern at all, given the size of the output gap. But, you know, it's just something to consider that whatever you do today and this year, you may have to reverse next year. So I think interest rate decisions from here on out becomes a lot harder. Up to now, I think it was clear you needed to move aggressively. So maybe there's another 50 basis point cuts, maybe even 100, you know. So maybe come May meetings, we'll see. I think definitely another interest rate cut. The question is just how much. Myself, I'm very torn on this because we haven't had interest rates at these low levels in a very long time. And so I'm not sure how the Reserve Bank and how comfortable they are living with negative real interest rates.
It's actually quite an interesting one to watch. Another 100 basis point cut would be quite a bit, because right now you have inflation and interest rates almost sitting at about the same levels. And
That's it, you see. So you would definitely, if you cut now by another 100 basis points, you're deep in negative real interest rate territory. So if you cut another 25, which is what the Reserve Bank's quarterly projection model suggests, remember, it recommended 5 cuts of 25 basis points. Of those 5 cuts, they executed 100. So that means there's 25 left. Now, I think the markets are sort of, if you look at the FRA curve, I'm speaking under correction. I didn't check this morning. But the last time I checked, they were sort of gyrating between anticipating another 25 or another 50 basis point cut. So for me, 25 to 50 would probably be the conservative thing to do. So that's what we've included in our forecast. But, you know, from an economic perspective, given that you're facing, let's say, a decline in GDP this year of anything between minus 5 and minus 15%. Let's take the range of forecasts that are out there. By cutting by another 100 basis points would certainly not be inappropriate, given that there is highly unlikely to be any demand pressure on prices. So your concern at this point shouldn't really be about inflation. However, next year, inflation does become a concern, because you can anticipate a sort of a bounce in economic activity from this very low base. It might not be an impressive bounce, but there will be a bit of a bounce. You can also anticipate that oil prices will normalize globally, and the rand will still be weaker. So then inflation becomes a bit of a challenge. So whatever you do this year, it will also have ripple effects and consequences for next year. So you're going to have to keep one eye, I think, as the monetary authorities of this country, you're going to have to keep one eye on next year also, whatever decision you make. But like I say, going 100 basis points from an economic perspective, especially since it's not threatening inflation, to me is not an inappropriate thing to do. Huge uncertainty, though, because we've moved so aggressively, and it makes it a lot harder to sort of estimate what they might be doing going forward.
Definitely. As we wrap up, I want to shift to another central bank, because right now the SARB really had a lot of room to move when it came to interest rates, but the US Fed did not have that room, because your interest rates were already pretty low, and you have that government now deciding to inject stimulus into the economy. We heard of $2 trillion, but when you Here, some other economists, they're saying it's closer to 7 billion, 7 trillion, sorry, that's being injected into the US economy, which has then sparked this debate about would this be a good time for the Reserve Bank to simply print money? And we wanted to perhaps get your thoughts as a parting shot.
Yeah, I do think I am picking up a lot of these sorts of arguments across Africa, and not just in South Africa and in many other emerging markets. And it does seem to me sometimes a little bit like the left of the ideological spectrum don't want to let a crisis go to waste, if you know what I mean. No, I think it remains a very dangerous thing for the South African Reserve Bank to do. The reality is that we have structurally higher levels of inflation. And when the virus have finally been brought under control, or let's put it this way, its sort of natural progression has worked through South Africa, we are not going to be the most efficient economy. We are still going to have high cost structures. And as a result, we are still going to have really relatively sticky and high inflation. And so the only thing you're going to be doing when you cut interest rates, when you print money, is you're going to devalue your currency. That's going to be the outcome of it. And I do find it quite amusing that there's this immediate comparison between South Africa and a country like the United States. There is absolutely no resemblance between South Africa and the US. For the US, for Europe, for Japan, where many of them have had to resort to quantitative easing to stimulate their economies, and where interest rates are extremely low. The main concern is deflation. It's actually rapidly falling prices. South Africa, COVID-19 or no COVID-19, are really light years away from any deflationary threat.
What's your outlook on the rand for the rest of the year, especially in light of what we've just spoken about? I guess the exchange rates, the interest rates, inflationary considerations, and the like.
Yeah, so I think the rand, is going to be under a lot of pressure. You're increasingly hearing a lot of analysts saying that the rand will pull back quite a lot. Even our bond analyst, Walter de Wet, believes the rand could go back to sort of 1650 to the US dollar by year end. The main argument for that being that when risk appetites normalize, South Africa still offers very high yields, very high interest rates for investors to try and reap some benefit from. And added to that, compared to the rest of the emerging market pool, we have deep and liquid financial markets, which means that you can move in quite in and out quite easily because of our advanced and elevated levels of liquidity. So the argument is that the rand should be one of the beneficiaries of the very extreme well, not extreme, the very aggressive easing we've seen in low-risk countries' interest rates. And our interest rates, although it's come down, it's still a very attractive margin over your low-risk nations, especially US interest rates. Now, that is obviously true. The old carry trade could help bring the rand back to stronger levels. I disagree a little bit with that argument from the perspective that I think a lot of investors, and certainly into many of the international research webinars that I've listened into over the last little while, they perceive South Africa's risk to have gone up permanently. And they're not wrong. It's not an unfair assessment. I think South African government debt is going to look incredibly ugly once this crisis is done and dusted. And I am not sure with what will be left of this economy by the time COVID-19 COVID-19 is overcome and defeated, that government will have many options to actually try and deal with the mountain of debt they would have built up during this crisis. So, my sense is that that risk has been priced into the rand, and you might find that the appetite for South Africa's, even our high yields, will be very speculative. So you'll probably have these spells where the rand gets sold off heavily and then it pulls back. And I think we're already seeing that. Sold off, then pulls back, but it's not really moving to a permanently stronger level. So for me, the rand will probably end here at much better levels where it is now, but I still think it will be over 17 to the US dollar.
So that's been it for this discussion. We were with Nicola Vama, who is the chief economist at Nedbank. She's just highlighting the fact that the rand could end the year in a stronger position when the recovery and COVID-19 risk is finally averted. But she's saying that it's likely to end the year above that 17 rand level. It just depends on what the shape of the recovery will look like. She, however, warned that in terms of whatever recovery comes about, no economic model at the moment will or can actually predict what the recovery is going to look like or when it's actually going to happen. She also highlights the fact that there's been some issues with getting economic data, but they are primarily watching what's going on in other countries and how their lockdowns have affected their economies, trying to do some projections on how all of this will affect South Africa. She also says that the South African Reserve Bank has done a pretty good job in terms of reacting to the crisis so far, given the room that they had to cut interest rates. But one of the big issues to consider going forward is that, unlike countries like the US, printing money is probably not a good option for this country. So that's been it. Thank you so much to Nicola for joining us. Nicola, how can people perhaps get in touch with you that want to engage you on some of these issues?
Well, we have our research is published on the Nedbank website. There is also a generalized email that people can access there. All our contact details is on the website. So you can actually email me directly, you can contact me directly, and we will certainly respond. You can also use any of the Nedbank branches to make contact with us. They are actually quite quick and transferring clients through to the right people.
So you heard visit their website, or you can go to one of their branches. As she said, their research is available on the website.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Another fascinating discussion coming through with Nicola from Nedbank, just highlighting what's happening and what is going to happen because of the extended lockdown period. I think right now the biggest issue that the country really does need to grapple with, especially government and the private sector, is when we come to the end of April, what's actually going to happen there? Because we can either continue extending the lockdown as is or let people go back to work, but in a controlled way. Until we get a vaccine or until we get a cure, it will be very hard for things to go back to normal. But the president just has to face the fact that economic activity does need to resume. What it can't do is we can't go back to things as normal, but things do need to pick up in terms of activity. So I think that will be their biggest question at the moment. And the other thing that I like highlighted by Nicholas, just that issue of printing money, because that would have been one of the easiest things to do, is to simply have the central bank coming out with stimulus. Let's say we're going to inject R1 trillion into the economy and perhaps give out some type of a universal basic income, like what's going on in America. They recently started giving out checks of $1,200 per month to Americans to sustain themselves during this period, which is something that perhaps the South African government could consider, given how many people don't have an ability to go out and actually do work, gain an income, etc. Because $1,200 works out, at the current exchange rates, you're looking at around 20 to sort of 30,000 rand, just depending on what type of calculation you do on that, whether it's going to be taxed, not taxed, all of that stuff. Just some things to consider. But like Nicholas said, it's hard for the SOB at the moment to just simply print money, so they have to come up with some other solutions. But come the end of April, something does need to change. People can't simply stay at home. At the same time, people can't simply just go back to work as if things are normal. A hybrid model of some sort is probably the best way forward. So that's been it for today's episode. Thank you so much. We're with Nicola Weimer, who is the chief economist at Nedbank. And this has brought us to the end of another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. Remember that you can find our podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. And then on Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. You can also review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.